we've often stepped out into cultural spaces and into artistic spaces here on Niagara Voices and Views. You may remember the past episodes where we talked to Elizabeth Chitty, for example, about her Confluences field trips, which in many ways is just as much about the history of a place as, say, when we talk to Fiona McMurrin from the Council of Canadians. But I think there's also some aspects of what Elizabeth was doing or is doing with her project that also connect back to some of the things we talked about today with Jane and Nate from Greening Niagara. In light of that, there's a piece, or there's a series of pieces that are up right now in the city that touch upon a number of issues that we've talked about on Niagara Voices and Views before, whether it be the notion of manufacturing, the idea of precarious employment, or also just the idea of the history of this place in terms of how that shows up in the downtown, and the downtown is a place that's revitalized, or the downtown is a place that has a future and an interesting past. This is a conversation that I had with the artist Anna Slafarski, and we talked a little bit before the last federal election. So some of the things that we talk about, we have answers to now, or some actually, we just have a few more questions. But this is a conversation that I'm passing on to you now in terms of letting our listeners hear it, because these pieces are still up into December. I'll give you just a little bit of information about it before we go right into the conversation that I have with Anna. These news box installations will be on display until Sunday, December 6, 2015, at three locations in St. Catharines: Niagara Artist Center at 354 St. Paul Street, the Knack Flea Market Gallery at 46 Turner Street, and at the Golden Pheasant at 244 Ontario Street. Now, you can always check out NAC's website, nac.org, for more information about that, but we cover quite a bit in today's conversation between Anna Slafarski and myself here on CFBU 103.7 FM. So we're lucky enough to have in the studio today Anna Slafarski, who's got an installation, although I like to think of it as an intervention, called A Man's Job, that is around the city of St. Catharines in three different locations. And it's a piece that seems very prescient considering some of the stories that are out there right now about the old GM plant on Ontario Street and the ongoing plans and talk about its demolition and what that means in terms of the history of this place. And what you're presenting, Anna, is kind of interesting because it looks backwards, but it also has a kind of, I don't know, I see a sort of element of black humor in it as well. So could you tell us a little bit about what you're going to be presenting through Niagara Artist Center?
So basically it's a poster that I put together in 2010. So it was for an open call for publication from the Niagara Artist Center. And the theme was Good Times, Bad Times. And at that time I was working in the library on another project, researching a completely other project about St. Catharines. But I noticed that in the newspaper articles dating back from the 50s, from the 20s, I think the earliest one is from the 40s on this project, there was a lot of sort of reports and headlines about the industry in St. Catharines, then GM, of course, and its workers. And for me, it just became sort of love letters or a kind of disintegrating marriage. And dark humor, I'm not sure, but there is a little bit of irony in it because each headline seems to be such a sort of trying to say this is fresh news. But in reality, it's just kind of a fluctuation between industry sinking and then industry sort of having a feeble attempt at reemerging or reviving itself. So I think that's where the irony comes from, is that each headline tries to be sort of dramatic in its announcement. But in fact, over that time period, little changes, and then there's actually just a very slow decline and seems inevitable, actually.
I like the analogy of love letters because when you're talking about it being the sort of same thing over and over again, there is that kind of, you've also used the analogy of a kind of failed romance in some of the writing you've done about it, but there does seem to be this, when you talk about irony, but almost a kind of disingenuity or a kind of dishonesty in terms of some of the headlines, knowing where it's going and knowing, looking backwards, that the relationship, if we put it that way, has ended. So looking back at these, there is also that idea where you can sort of see that it is the same thing again and again and again, and that even some of the headlines going back into the 80s are similar to the ones in the 90s, and that's just the same cycle that we see over and over. And I think it's one of those things as well that where you're choosing to install them says something about how that connects to the history of this place as well.
The locations, so Stephen from the Niagara Artist Center really assisted me in trying in installing the piece, because I don't live in St. Catharines anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm from St. Catharines originally, but I haven't been living here for over 10 years. So knowing where people go, where people have, you know, they're in contact with these sorts of things, and I don't have much of a clue of where that is. So Stephen really helped me out on that, to pick the places. But I'm really happy because you said it's an intervention, and I think that's what he was kind of going for, is not just showing something in the Niagara Artist Center where people who are interested in the arts community here will go to, but also kind of reaching out to people who might be shopping or in the flea market, who might fall upon it unexpectedly.
And I think that's one of those things as well, like having one of the pieces installed at the Golden Pheasant. When I've mentioned that to people I know that have lived in St. Catharines for a long period of time, that's something that immediately resonates in terms of the history of workers at GM, both in a positive and in a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
But it is something that does really bridge that notion between art making and the history of a site, especially in light of the conversation that's happening right now in St. Catharines about a kind of renewed gentrification in the downtown. So the whole history of this site, and it is interesting when you talk about not having been here for about a decade and yet being from here originally. And that's something I mentioned because I haven't been here for probably about two decades as a place to sort of spend a lot of time in. And the last time I was here, the downtown looked more like a kind of industrial wasteland and was really sort of dealing with the fallout and the kind of economic depression from things such as free trade or NAFTA. So that's also, I imagine, part of the history of what you're talking about with a man's job. But I'm curious as to what you kind of hope for as a reaction to this piece. You mentioned earlier about Steve's sort of really great work in terms of helping to put this into spaces that aren't just art spaces. So mm-hmm. What kind of conversation are you hoping happens with this piece? What kind of reaction are you hoping for with this work?
Well, I have to say that I don't have like a sort of direct didactic message for anybody. I think what's more interesting for me is to sort of compile all these headlines to give a bigger picture in the most literal sense. And to see that, I mean, for me, what's interesting is the bigger picture of labor-based industry in the entire country, not even in St. Catharines, is moving away from the country. And I know that it's quite painful, but the reality of it is that it's not coming back. Maybe in the text that I wrote also for the Niagara Arts Center in the issue Letters to the Editors, basically the conclusion that I came up with over, you know, so a few days trying to contemplate of what is the message I'm trying to write here. Mm-hmm. I was trying to figure out maybe it's time to reconsider how we value work and what do we think about as work. And if industry is not coming back, how can we change, you know, our communities and grow, heal, and move on? And I don't know what that's going to look like. Holding on to GM or any kind of other sort of labor-based industry, I think that's not the answer. But I think that I'm just interested in the kind of conversations of looking back at a larger picture when people aren't focusing on the specific headline of that day, but looking at a larger history, a larger period of labor, industry, and economy in Southern Ontario.
2 points you make there of seeing it more as an arch, more of an overarching story of what this place is and sort of thinking about its history and not just seeing it specifically from one lens or from another, but as part of the larger story of this place and what that means. Because, I mean, you span a good chunk of history, and that's the sort of piece of history that when people think about St. Catharines or think about the Niagara region, that's what comes to mind. But there's so many other things that have happened here. I think about talking to Elizabeth Chitty with her Confluences project, and she's looking further back in terms of how this city came to be and how things got named. Mm-hmm. And what's fascinating about that is that that's a history that maybe isn't as vivid or as still as lived as what this is. But who's to say where this city will be 40 years from now? I mean, we talk a lot right now about the Marilyn Walker Center, but it's worth noting what that's going to mean 20 years from now and looking, you know, at some of the headlines that have appeared about that story as well. Mm-hmm. Some of them are so intensely celebratory and you wonder how those headlines will be 10 years from now or 20 years from now in terms of how that eventually develops, and how in some ways that kind of speaks to what you're saying about this notion of transforming what we think of as labor and what we think of as workers. I think what's also kind of funny, and the writing that you have and the writing that Steve has sort of play in different ways. Again, I do like the whole notion of the relationship analogy, because there is that whole idea as well that sometimes relationships go in strange directions. And there's that kind of joke about how you may think the relationship is wonderful, but the partner in it has already plotted their escape and is sort of out the door. And again, it's an analogy that you can apply to some of the sort of things that have happened in the industrial belt and the sort of, you know, industrial regions of this country. I think about watching some of the things on the news and citing things that have happened here or things that have happened in Windsor. So it is very true in terms of it being something that's universal. This opens this weekend. People who are listening to this will be hearing this when the project has been out there for a few days, and it'll be up into December. Are you thinking of doing anything else along these lines in terms of the history of St. Catharines, or is this something that fits into your larger body of work in terms of exploring histories of places?
Well, actually, I've done a lot of different works about St. Catharines. Whenever I come back, I spend a lot of time in the libraries doing a lot of research. They've varied, though, in terms of politics or direction. So I'm actually more interested, I think what interested me initially in this project was the language. To compile it all together, I did find it sort of ironic, sort of interesting, the drama in each headline, which led me to think about how the relationship between GM and its workers was sort of built and disintegrating. But what initially kind of attracted me was the language. And that's how it fits into my body of work, I would say. That's how all the projects that I've done about St. Catharines, I mean, it's always started with some text, archival sort of message, I guess I would find. I just wanted to say one thing too about the analogy, about the relationship. One thing that I really struck me as interesting was this kind of idea of a marital contract, which is so prominent in the beginning of the history of the industrial, sort of modern industrial age, is this lifelong contract. And that was really important for me in the narrative that I wrote later, was where did this idea of a marital contract come from? And actually, you know, you say that this project spans, you know, from the 40s to 2011, the headlines that I collected. But in retrospect, that's a very short period of time for an economic phase. I mean, maybe today it seems like a long one because we're switching around, so everything switches so quickly. But that's the strongest metaphor I had in the story I was trying to build later on, was this marital contract was not what it seemed. And who told anybody that marriage is forever? Marriage will be forever. And I think that that's because that was the language of the modern industrial era at the beginning, was that this is a family builder. The industry is part of the family. We help to build your family. You get contracts forever. We take care of you. It was a post-war kind of language, which was really interesting, but it didn't last very long until that all started to fall apart. I mean, it only lasted about 30, 40 years. Which is a pretty good marriage, but
it is. But again, I very much like that analogy, because there are so many things there that do transfer over, especially if you think about how there is this kind of assumption on both sides about what a marriage is. It sometimes never do the ideas actually meet. And sometimes it's not talked about. There's assumptions that are made. There's always these kind of assumptions, but also those kind of white picket dreams, for lack of a better way to put them, when you consider these days that a marriage that lasts 10 years is significant, or even just the kind of disposability of that. And I don't say that with any kind of degree of judgment, because, you know, it also makes me think about people who stay in marriages when they shouldn't for the children, and people who stay in bad jobs or in bad situations again for this. But it does connect back to that notion that now, as a workforce, we expect to travel. We expect to be nomadic. We really don't expect to have jobs that are beyond contract work, and what that sort of means in that analogy.
Exactly. And I think that's, I mean, my parents are still married, and both my brothers are married, and I hope they stay married. I'm not criticizing marriage, but it is reflected in industry, but it's also reflected in personal relationships. I mean, there's more people living singles living in one person households more than ever, you know, in major cities around the world. So I mean, it's this kind of this need to be flexible in this precarious world, as they call it, has become commonplace. But my question in my narrative is basically, who created the story that the world was stable, basically, because it never was, basically. It was kind of an illusion, I think, that was created for sort of economic purposes.
I don't see it as a criticism of marriage. It's simply the way things change. And change just happens whether you want it to or not. And sometimes it's seen as a positive thing. Sometimes it's seen as a bad thing. As I said, 10 years from now, if we're seeing headlines about how the art school in the downtown has transformed the downtown and made it all wonderful, we'll have a new city narrative about mm-hmm. what this place is. And people won't be lamenting quite so much what happened in terms of the industrial labor market. But I think at the same time, too, when you ask about or when you comment about who sort of said it would ever be permanent, it kind of comes back to the notion of selling you something. So, you know, you'll want to do this or you'll want to have that. I mean, one of the things about being nomadic, as it seems, is that you also consume less and therefore you become less of that kind of post-World War II stable specific community and mm-hmm. change just happens. But I guess I would also say we have to come back to that notion of the nuclear family, which is sometimes presented as being this universal eternal thing, and it's a mid-20th century invention. And yeah. We're moving away from that just the same way that we move towards it. I do like the title of this, though, A Man's Job, because it does imply a lot of those things we were just talking about in terms of also history and gender and sort of the ideas of working and a community and that notion of family that you mentioned as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's an ironic title. Also included in the poster is an excerpt from a journal that was published in 1937 by McKinnon Industries, which mm-hmm. was bought up by GM. So basically, they were the kind of like founding industrial body in St. Catharines before that. In their journal, they kind of described what a man in with what his relationship with his job is. And when I read this, it just seemed like so alien to me, so ridiculous and so exaggerated that I couldn't believe that that was a reality. But it was, that a man's relationship to his job was just as important as his family. And
it's like he's married to it.
Like he's married to it. And that's where the idea kind of started. And it was a reciprocated relationship. It wasn't that the man loved his job because he needed it and it gave him support and stability, but the industry also loved the man. It needed him. It needed him to be there day in and day out, and he was rewarded and respected for that and made out to be a hero. And that kind of relationship, it did exist, but it didn't last.
Yeah, it is. It's so dramatic, as you say. It's one of those things where it's almost like you would expect to see this in a communist workers' play being put on in Moscow in 1936 about how the worker is the basis of the entire system, that, you know, that kind of switching up any kind of religious, because there is a really sort of strong sacred notion to how that's talked about, and instead it's put into kind of a secular, almost communist worker space. And again, I don't say that as a kind of criticism, but if you consider that in the 1930s, you had a lot of individuals who felt that communism was going to be the next great world religion mm-hmm. because of its sort of valuing of the worker. But it's interesting in terms of that language and how suspect it seems now.
Yeah, it seems suspect because it was that kind of language, that kind of rhetoric was engaged because it was necessary. I mean, there was a country that needed to be rebuilt and there was an economy that mm-hmm. needed to be competitive. But it doesn't seem transparent. It seems emotionally manipulative. And that's why I think that the disintegration of the industry is so painful, because it didn't stop there. The emotional kind of rhetoric continued for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. And the job was not just a job. It was part of people's families and part of people's lives. And it built the city. And it was a very emotional issue. And I don't know how they could have avoided that, because I don't know, maybe people needed to be emotional to be so dedicated. And that's what the industry and the country needed at that time. But, you know, like just like in personal relationships, heartbreak is completely and utterly, unfortunately, unavoidable.
And betrayal.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it comes back to a relationship analogy, that even when, and I think we can sort of say that all of us, once you've reached a certain age, you've had relationships where when it ends, that sense of betrayal at the immediate point is just so strong and so horrifying. And of course, you know, you wait a few years and everything's fine and you've moved on. But again, it's that notion that because it was so intimate to this space. And Steve touches on a few of those ideas as well in the piece that he writes about the idea of maybe kind of rage or a kind of depressed rage or a kind of depressed betrayal that people have towards GM. Like one of the lines in his piece talking about how they don't have their logo on anything in the city. And that's something that can be really interesting in terms of how, when you talk about this history, that there isn't even a kind of keepsake or anything like that. Although, again, to go back to a relationship analogy, that may not be the healthiest thing either.
Yeah, I really like the pairing of my text with Stevens. I think mine was much more of this analogy that we've been talking to up until now, is this disintegration of the traditional marriage as used as a metaphor this industry. Steven had a much more contemporary story. I remember my parents read both of the texts. Mine has sort of this kind of very clear beginning, middle, end conclusion. Steven's kind of has this kind of explosion of senselessness, which was so great. And my parents were so confused. And I said to them, but that's how many people feel, that they put so much time and they just don't, it's just senseless at this point. And they don't understand what it all amounted to. What was it all for? And
and does it all mean nothing now?
Yeah.
Again, this is sounding like things you yell at the end of a relationship.
Yeah.
Your mention of your parents is perfect, because my mother, who has had several brothers that worked at GM in the foundry and in a few other spaces, when I mentioned this to her, was very interested to sort of see which headlines it would be. Mm-hmm. And I haven't shown it to my father, but Stephen's text in terms of talking about drinking at lunch, when my dad was working, he worked near GM and would talk about encountering guys on lunch at the Golden Pheasant. And some of the things that Stephen talks about in that, I've heard those stories before. So when you talk about how it's more of a kind of an explosion of a piece, it's also the type of stories that, you know, you still hear. Mm-hmm. And so there's something about it that's just really kind of immediate and has that kind of, you could totally picture running into someone in a bar here who's going to rage at you and tell that story.
Yeah, and that's something that I have unfortunately had no contact with. Mm. I mean, my parents are immigrants to this country, they're self-employed, and so they never really got into the local industry, although that doesn't mean that they don't have friends and they're not in contact with people that are that have been involved with GM. But yeah, it was very important to get Stephen Remus into this project, because he really was kind of the lifeline into what's going on in the city now. Right. I can sort of step back. That was my job, to step back, show the overview, the outsider perspective, although with a slight insider perspective. But he was the lifeline in the moment. And I like that his story kind of doesn't have that neat, tidy ending.
Oh, it's messy. It's messy, as it should be.
It's messy, because that's what it looks like when you're standing in the midst of something. It's difficult to put a tidy conclusion to something when you're in the midst of anything. It's very difficult to say, you know, who's right, what's wrong. You just kind of report things as they are and as they come. And they don't always have a conclusion, because that's not how life actually goes when you're living it, right?
And I think one of the things, and maybe this is a good spot to end on, is that to even sort of ask what happened in terms of GM here. And not even necessarily talking about what happened in terms of its closure and departure, but just how the whole story went. It is almost like asking individuals involved in a kind of personal relationship what happened, and you know you're going to get that kind of Rashomon notion of five different stories about the same thing. This is something I think that adds an interesting sort of flavor to that. So thank you for making time to come and talk to us about A Man's Job. I feel like I should say that in a much more appropriately manly voice. But this is something that's up right now, and I'll just throw out the locations, although I'm going to be putting some information out online about this. But one is at the Niagara Artist Center at 354 St. Paul Street, the Knack Flea Market Gallery at 46 Turner Crescent, and at the Golden Pheasant at 244 Ontario Street. I may show up to that one and have a few beers, I think, while I sort of maybe do some research and see how people react to it. But Anna, thank you for making time to come on the show.
Yeah, thanks for making time for me.